clinical study, every interaction is to help you, your family, and your neighbors live better. We do everything humanly possible because we see everything humanly possible in you. To find out how compassion motivates world-class care, visit Frater.com.
This is Bucks OT.
Takes it into the paint, attacks the rack, sends it down with a grown man dunk. Oh, the Greek Freak, he's eaten now.
A final look at the game and a preview of the next matchup on the BMO Bucks Radio Network.
Tough one in Toronto tonight for the Bucks. It's all Raptors, 130 to 111, our final score, as the Raptors take this thing wire to wire in the victory and send the Bucks to 500 now at 2-2. As a team, the Bucks handed out 19 assists in this game tonight. They were led in assists by Dame Lillard. Again, 15 points for Dame on 4 of 9 shooting. You heard some of the thoughts from Adrian Griffin there saying it's going to take time for both Dame and Giannis to continue to develop and flesh out that chemistry. And also citing, I've got to do a better job with this offense and with some of what we're scheming. When they're going to throw multiple bodies at Dame, as we have seen through four games this season, I got to do a better job of figuring out how to get it back to him. And to Dame's credit, 6 assists, that when you do see those multiple bodies, somebody is going to be open. Tonight, that someone was seemingly Malik Beasley, 6 of 9 on threes and 20 points scored for Bees. The 6 assists for Damian Lillard, though, as we noted, led the team in assists tonight. That includes our assist of the game brought to you by Freightert. Freightert and the Medical College of Wisconsin. Their health network offers same-day care options in person and by virtual visit, because understanding your life is at the heart of what they do. As a team, 13 of 34 on threes were the Bucks in this game, but Malik Beasley basically accounted for half of that. 6 of 9 on three-pointers was Beasley. So you take him out of the mix, and there's 7 of 25. That's just 28% shooting from deep. So Malik Beasley, we've seen this before, that he can heat up and score in bunches, but unfortunately, he was the only one that was getting those bunches of scoring tonight. Bucks did not win the opening tip tonight, but be sure to tune in at the start of each game for the Sargento tip-off for homes. Every time the Bucks do win the opening tip, Sargento will donate $500 to Milwaukee Habitat for Humanity. Sargento, the official cheese of the Milwaukee Bucks. When we come back, we will run through the rest of the numbers, take a look at the NBA scoreboard as well, and get you set for Friday night, the debut of the in-season tournament. All of that after this on the BMO Bucks Radio Network.
Concordia. If you love them enough to listen to them practice the same song on tuba,
please be done.
Over and over and over and over and over. Then surely you'll check nhtsa.gov/the right seat to make sure they're correctly buckled in the back seat.
Sounds good, honey.
Check today at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
People won't give you the real talk on drugs, but it's time we know the facts. Fentanyl is killing people. It's a powerful opioid, often made illegally and commonly mixed with illicit drugs. It can even be pressed into counterfeit pills that resemble prescription medications. Just 2 milligrams, about the size of a few grains of sand, can potentially be lethal. This isn't an ad to scare you, but it is an ad to make you think twice. Get the facts. Go to realdealonfentanyl.com. This message is brought to you by the Ad Council.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here. I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy.
Planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe, and is the best way to protect that legacy.
Protect your legacy. Visit ready.gov/plan for the tools and tips you need to start your emergency preparedness plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
OptUS Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the lingo.
Jelly. Jelly adjective. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous. As in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org, brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
.130 to .111 is our final score tonight. It's the Toronto Raptors taking down the Bucks, behind 26 points from Pascal Siakam, 24 from Dennis Schroeder, and 21 from Scotty Barnes. Play of the game brought to you by Potawatomi Hotel and Casino. Our play of the game tonight is the play of Malik Beasley. 7 of 10 from the field, 6 of 9 on his three-point attempts. He led the team with 20 points. Malik Beasley and his stat line are play of the game, brought to you by Potawatomi Hotel and Casino. Find your win at the Midwest Premier Gaming, Entertainment, and Hotel Destination. All of that and more waiting for you at Potawatomi Hotel and Casino. A 19-point loss in Toronto. We'll get to the NBA scoreboard and preview Friday's matchup against the Knicks. Before we do that, let's pause 10 seconds for station ID.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK 1260 AM Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
Bucks simply just need to bounce back. As we heard from Adrian Griffin, this team has the ability to take some shots and pick themselves up. And it's certainly a learning curve that this team going through in the early going this season with a new coach, new system, and new teammates. And we saw that tonight in Toronto. We'll get you caught up on the NBA scoreboard and wrap things up next on the BMO Bucks Radio Network.
When you're high, you feel different. You think different, you talk different, you draw different, you listen to music different, but you probably knew that. Problem is, you also drive different, and not in a good way. That's why driving high is illegal everywhere. So if you're high, just don't drive. Make a plan to get a sober ride. Because if you feel different, you drive different. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Don't let biased algorithms or degree screens or exclusive professional networks or stereotypes. Don't let anything keep you from discovering the half of the workforce who are stars. Workers skilled through alternative routes rather than a bachelor's degree. It's time to tear the paper ceiling and see the stars beyond it. Find out how you can make stars part of your talent strategy at tearthepaperceiling.org. Brought to you by Opportunity at Work and the Ad Council.
The RPG came through the belly of the aircraft. We don't talk about the female combat wounded. These are our daughters and our sisters and our mothers. Wounded Warrior Project came into my life and taught me how to stand back up and get back in the fight. The truth is, I think we all have this strength inside of us, but until you're tested, you just don't know what's there.
See how Wounded Warrior Project empowers women veterans like Beth by visiting woundedwarriorproject.org/empowerwomenvets.
Radio keeps your community informed, entertained, and connected. It's what we're all about at the Civic Media Network of local radio stations.
We're having fun and moving fast to preserve hometown radio across Wisconsin.
This includes a commitment to news.
Now we want to invite you to join Civic Media's exclusive Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News. It's a place to share your community's news and chat with others from across the state about it.
Join the Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News, today. It's the perfect companion to your local Civic Media radio station. Did you know this local radio station is part of Civic Media? Learn more about the entire network at civicmedia.us.
Justin Garcia wrapping things up here on the BMO Bucks Radio Network as it's all Toronto tonight. Raptors take down the Bucks by 19, 130-111. Let's get you caught up on the NBA scoreboard as we had 13 games on the schedule tonight. A majority of those have now gone final. Starting in Detroit, the Portland Trailblazers take down the Pistons 110-101. Shaedon Sharpe scored 29 in the win for Portland, while Cade Cunningham dropped 30 in the loss for Detroit. In Atlanta, the Hawks improved to 3-2 on the season behind 24 points from DeJounte Murray. They beat the Wizards 130-121. In Miami, the Brooklyn Nets get to 2-2. They beat the Miami Heat. Heat now 1-4 on the season after a 109-105 loss. Mikal Bridges with 21 points in the victory, while Bam Adebayo finished with 21 points and 14 rebounds in the loss. Had a first-round playoff rematch, a couple of them tonight, actually. This one in the Eastern Conference, the Cavs get past the Knicks. Knicks, of course, the team the Bucks will see next. 95-89 is the score there. Donovan Mitchell scored 30 in the victory, while Jalen Brunson put up 24 in the loss. Both teams now 2-3 on the season. And the score, stat line, all of it, you name it, from the night, belongs to the Boston Celtics. 155. They score 155 points and beat the Indiana Pacers by 51. 155 to 104, the final score. Jason Tatum scored 30 points in the victory. Celtics are now 4-0 on the season. All five of their starters scored in double figures. They had eight players total getting to double figures. 17 off the bench from Sam Hauser, 15 from Peyton Pritchard. Everything coming up roses the first four games of the season for the undefeated Boston Celtics. We have a handful of games that are currently in action, nearing completion. We start first in Oklahoma City, where the Pelicans lead the Thunder 108-106. Less than 15 seconds remaining in that one. Chet Holmgren with 19 points and 11 rebounds for Oklahoma City. In Houston, Rockets lead the Hornets 115-110. Houston's looking for their first win of the season. About 2 minutes left in that one. Fred VanVleet, by the way, leading the way with 22 points. Another eye-popping score here in Minneapolis. Timberwolves are looking to get to 500. They're 1-2 on the season, and they're 5 minutes away from that second win. They're up 21 on the Denver Nuggets. This another playoff rematch here. 99-78 the score. Nikola Jokic, though, 25 points and 10 rebounds already. 17 from Mike Conley leading the way for the T-Wolves. Just about 2 minutes left in the third in Dallas. Mavs lead the Bulls 76-75. Luka Doncic with 12 points and 7 assists there, while Nikola Vucevic, 16 points and 17 rebounds in less than three quarters of work already. Jazz are blowing out the Memphis Grizzlies. A lot of blowouts tonight. The Bucks weren't the only one. 78-46. They're about to head to halftime. Memphis, by the way, is 0-4 to open the season, 24 minutes away from an 0-5 start. And remember, Ja Morant still suspended for 20 more games. Lauri Markkanen up to 17 points to lead the way for the Utah Jazz. And in San Francisco, Warriors lead the Kings 3-0. It literally just tipped off. Final game of the night is in Los Angeles. It's the Battle of Los Angeles between the Lakers and the Clippers. That game tips off momentarily. 130-111 was our final score from Toronto. It's the Raptors taking down the Bucks and sending the Bucks to a 2-2 start on the season. Our next game broadcast will be Friday night when the in-season tournament begins. It's the Bucks and the New York Knicks from Fiserv Forum. 7 o'clock tip-off, 6:30 is when our pregame coverage begins. We're going to talk quite a bit about the in-season tournament, give you all the details you need to know, and actually let me correct something. 6:30 tip on Friday, 6 o'clock is when our pregame coverage will begin. If you're in Milwaukee, we're going to talk extensively about the in-season tournament coming up on our extended postgame show, Bucks Talk. You can hear that as soon as we wrap up here on the BMO Bucks Radio Network. You can find Bucks Talk on our flagship station, WTMJ, and we will be with you until 10 o'clock. All the questions you need answered about the in-season tournament and some more thoughts on tonight's game. We'll get to all of that and more on Bucks Talk as soon as we wrap things up here. For Dave Kane in Toronto, and for our studio crew here at the Bucks Radio Network Studios, our engineer Jason Gordon and our producer Tommy Wirtz, I'm Justin Garcia signing off, reminding you we will talk once again Friday night with more Bucks basketball right back here on the BMO Bucks Radio Network.
Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate that our daughters have what they need to grow and learn. But that isn't the case for nearly 13 million kids in the U.S. that struggle with hunger.
Childhood hunger is a heartbreaking reality that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and provides it to families and children in need.
You can help kids in need in your community by visiting feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
So if everything looks like
You know, if you got a hammer and everything looks like a nail, it doesn't matter if it's a screw or a glass dish. It still looks like a hammer or to a nail to most people.
Yeah, just like we need a varied diet for our bodies, we need a varied diet for our minds. Like if you're getting all your information from Fox News, you're going to get manipulated by Fox News. If you're getting all your information from the New York Times, then the New York Times assumptions are going to sneak into your mind and possibly color the way you view things. So you need a varied information diet. You need to talk to people who disagree with you. You need to learn to treat their views as something you can learn from. Because the moment you start to think you have all the answers and everybody else is deluded, that's when you stop learning and your mind becomes sort of closed and rigid.
Yeah, but here's the thing, Andy, and you know, I've been saying lately, and maybe I'm a little too biased, that you know the Republican Party right now seems, or at least some of them, seem to lie a little differently than they ever did in the past. In the past, there was always a kernel of truth to the lie. There was always something to the conspiracy where you go, oh yeah, I can see kind of how you got there. It just seems like now conspiracies are made up out of whole cloth. You know, like, yeah. Hey, there's a child porn ring in the bottom of a pizza shop in the basement where there's no basement. But you know, but people buy it because this is what's being thrown out there and regurgitated time and time and time again. What is it about these conspiracies that grab people?
Yeah, well, I mean, for a while, I think the right wing has learned that they can manipulate minds by manipulating information. And because they've done that so successfully, they just keep doubling down and doubling down and doubling down on the lies. And the lies get more and more outrageous. I mean, and the Comet ping pong pedophile ring in the basement of a pizza shop is what, just part of a kind of a much larger QAnon thing, which is just full, just loaded with nonsense. In fact, I like to call it QAnon sense because that's kind of, that stuff does not withstand even a modicum of scrutiny, but it's really seductive stuff, especially if you're feeling desperate. And by the way, we know this about the mind's immune system. The more desperate and alienated you feel, the more prone you are to conspiracy thinking.
No, my mind is now going, yeah, you're absolutely right. A lot of these folks that I know who are the Q world, these are people who don't have anything better to do but sit on, because I've read some of these things. These are people who need to get lives. But here's the thing. You know, I have an acquaintance who is deep into the Q stuff, and they truly believe they're out there fighting, you know, child sex trafficking. They haven't found it yet, but they believe it's out there. And it's that belief that you just can't shake the believer. Right. You can't. I've found you can't really talk to the believer. So, as someone who thinks the way you do, that you know, we need to fight misinformation. And how do you deal with the believer, or do we just move along?
Yeah. So what the research tells us is that it's much easier to prevent a mind infection than to cure one. So if you can prevent somebody from falling down a rabbit hole, that's a lot easier than trying to pull them out of a rabbit hole. So if we have a limited amount of resources to spend on this, it makes sense to do what's called pre-bunking instead of debunking. So the people who are already in the deep end of QAnon, I don't know, it takes a lot of work to rescue somebody from the QAnon rabbit hole. But if you go out and you teach kids who haven't yet fallen under its spell how to spot the nonsense and how to ignore it, you can save 10 times as many kids.
Right. So we're talking about saving the future. We're just writing those folks off. And I don't disagree with that. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show here with Andy Norman. Andy's the founder of the Cognitive Immunology Research Collaborative, Circle, also the chief catalyst behind the Mental Immunity Project. Tell me about that. The Mental Immunity Project. If you want to check out their website, obviously mentalimmunityproject.org. We'll get links out on social media. Tell me, what is that?
Yeah, so the Circle or Circe is kind of our institute for pointy-headed scholars who like to think about this stuff. But Mental Immunity Project is our attempt to kind of make this stuff practical for people who can't spend all their time thinking about it. So the Mental Immunity Project, we have a website set up for it, and we basically reduced it to 10 simple lessons that you can learn each one in about a minute. You can learn each of these 10 fundamental principles, each of which can strengthen your mind's immune system and make you a better at spotting BS. I'm not saying it's a magic bullet. I'm not saying 10 minutes is enough. 10 minutes will get you started down this path. But once you learn the basics, it can actually become a virtuous circle. You learn how to ask questions, the right kind of questions. You learn not to get sucked into the kind of over-the-top suspicions that drive, say, fire theory. You learn to distinguish reliable from unreliable information, and it puts you on a path to a life where you're just basically making better decisions left and right.
And now you've got a book, you know, titled Mental Immunity as well. It came out a year or two ago. I'm sure that would help, right?
Yeah, that book is the first several chapters are meant for a general audience, and the later chapters are meant for a more scholarly audience. But I do recommend the book, the website I mentioned, the Mental Immunity Project website, tries to make it just super fun and easy and accessible.
So let me ask you the last line of question I've got for you, because I tend to be a little pessimistic on the. On the front of, you know, we're going to be able to hold back the onslaught of AI. You're seeing stories every day that AI is just reinforcing all of the horrible stereotypes and horrible misinformation that's being shoved down our throat. Do you have faith, hope? Do you have any positive thoughts that you can share with me that you think that it's going to be okay? Or you know, because my mind is like, man, trouble on the horizon with all of the people around the world who, you know, Iran and China and Russia and all the people with their misinformation weaponizing our information to pit us against each other. I got real struggles. You?
Two things are true. AI is going to be super disruptive, and it's going to change the information environment in ways that we don't have antibodies for right now. Lawrence Lessig, a lawyer who fights for the working class and against corruption for years, has just said the AIs are going to create all kinds of information misinformation that we don't have cognitive antibodies for. And he's right. And there's serious cause for concern there. It's also true that it's very easy for our fears about these things to spiral out of control, especially because when there's so much that's unknown. I'm going to be meeting just in a couple of days with some of the top thinkers in the world on this, some of whom think that, we ought to be pushing the alarm button, and others who are saying, hang on, if you calm your mind down and think this thing through with analogous cases, it may not be as bad as all that. So don't panic yet. I don't quite know where I stand on this. I'm hearing good arguments on both sides, but I know this, that if I panic, I'm not going to be part of the solution.
No, that's an excellent point. And I know I said that this is the last question, but since you got into this, I got to ask, the Biden administration, Biden just put a new executive order for some new rules on AI.
Yeah.
And look, I think that's about a decade too late. I've been screaming for quite a while to get ahead of technology and, maybe figuring out how we ease into it. Look, I'm not a Luddite. I don't think we smash the machines. I don't see how we can. I don't think we can restrain this for too long, but there's got to be some parameters where we go, there's got to be some accountability. So do you have any thoughts on the executive order? Is it going to be helpful? Is there a way to restrain this? I know that's a lot, but I'm curious your thoughts.
Yeah. Well, first of all, hallelujah for the general point you're making. Absolutely, there needs to be accountability. Absolutely, there need to be guidelines and limits. If Congress had been serving us well, we'd have a well-developed regulatory framework that helps to keep information technology something that enhances our lives instead of tears our nation apart. We've got a lot of catching up to do. I think the Biden administration effort on this, from what I've read, is a very nice start in the right direction. There's a lot more that needs to be done.
And that's the answer. There is a lot more that needs to be done. But Andy Norman, I appreciate you taking some time for us. Hope folks will take a look at the book, Mental Immunity. We'll get links out on social media how you can take a look at that. Also, check out their website, mentalimmunityproject.org. Andy Norman, I appreciate you taking time for us.
Thank you, Rick. It's been a pleasure, and let's do this again sometime.
Absolutely. Good stuff. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com, or right back with your thoughts. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Have the talk.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
I like Andy's energy. I like the idea that, maybe calm down. Because in this world, I tend to see how bad this can be. Because I've seen some of these deep fakes. Scary stuff. And look, there's enough misinformation in our politics already than to have ads of politicians saying, stupid stuff that they would never say. And this, again, there's part of me that, doesn't freak out by going, look, I know Joe Biden's never going to come out and say, no, unions shouldn't exist. He's not going to come out and say some of the craziness. But you're going to see some really bizarre stuff coming on. And look, our politics have gotten so, so bizarre. For instance, there's a guy running for Senate. I think maybe he lives in Pennsylvania, maybe he doesn't. Last I knew, he was in Connecticut. Who knows? But Dave McCormick is evidently running for Senate here in Pennsylvania, and he was on a podcast, and evidently on the podcast, they've got nothing else to talk about. They were talking about the biggest animal that he could fight. Yeah, I know. And the quote, and this is what stopped me. You got this guy who is in his 50s. He's an older guy. He says, I think I can take a bear. If I could get a bear right pre-hibernation or post-hibernation, and I hadn't eaten much, and he hadn't eaten much, or he had eaten much, I'm long on McCormick. And you go, wait a second. I have a couple of different thoughts on this. One, here's a guy who's totally full of it, totally full of himself. And, one of those guys that, if you ask him, he's done everything, the best at everything. He's the man. Or he's just totally delusional because a bear. Now, here's the thing. And I know my animal rights friends are going to lose their mind and be unhappy and send me angry emails. And that's okay. I probably deserve it. But I remember, when I was college age, they used to have wrestle the bear competitions at bars occasionally. And they'd bring in, like a 250, 300-pound bear. They'd get it all drugged up. And they'd put it in a ring and you'd go in and wrestle with it. And the number one thing that they would tell you is, don't make the bear angry. And they said, never punch the bear. Do not punch the bear. You go and wrestle with him. You can wrestle the bear, but don't punch the bear. And I remember a guy who punched the bear and ticked that bear off. And that bear basically beat this guy senseless. It took like 6 or 7 guys just to get the bear off of him. And so I listen to someone like McCormick with this delusional thinking, a guy who wants to be senator, with this kind of delusional self. and I go, this isn't what we need in this state. We don't need people who think that they're heroes.
You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.
ABC News, I'm Andy Field. Five Americans among the first group to escape Gaza at a border crossing with Egypt. Biden administration saying it's preparing more.
What they're saying to people is that their name is expected to be on a list of people approved to cross into Egypt, and that they should check this list that's going to be published every morning to see if their name is on it to get out that day. The list is going to be published by the Hamas-run customs authorities.
ABC's Ian Pannell in Tel Aviv. Justice Department charging a Florida man who prosecutors say left a threatening voicemail with the World Jewish Congress in New York. A GOP-led resolution to expel Republican Congressman George Santos of New York has failed.
I'm fighting tooth and nail to clear my name.
He has entered a not guilty plea to 23 federal charges, also facing an ethics investigation. Federal Reserve chose to keep its key interest rate unchanged for the second straight meeting, but left the door open to future rate hikes depending on inflation. This is ABC News.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
For Civic Media News, I'm Nate Wiggehow. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. An inmate died at the Waupun State Prison on Monday. That's the third death at Waupun in 4 months. The Dodge County Medical Examiner says autopsy reports won't be ready for a couple of months. The Waupun Prison has been in lockdown since March. The Journal Sentinel reports about 1,000 inmates have to stay in their cells around the clock. Families say they're concerned about health care at the prison. Wisconsin Supreme Court Chief Justice Annette Ziegler delivered the annual State of the Judiciary Address in Lake Geneva on Wednesday. The veteran conservative justice didn't spend much time addressing her clashes with the court's new liberal majority. Chief Ziegler instead focused on improving court security and mental health treatment options for offenders. I'm Nate Wiggehout, Civic Media News.
Time out.
Remember, we're a team that plays together. Listen, the winning will take care of itself. We just have to get everyone involved.
In interscholastic sports, we celebrate what makes every one of us unique. And in the pursuit of a common goal, everyone in the huddle, in the bleachers, and in the community comes together. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
This is your hometown radio, Refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
Here's your updated forecast. Lows dip down to around 20 tonight under partly cloudy skies, southwesterly winds around 5 miles per hour. Tomorrow, high of 38, 26 tomorrow night, cloudy skies. I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley on Lake Air, WLAK, 1260 AM. Right now, 24.
Gillette Intimate gives guys a gentle and easy shave on there, and around there, and even under there. Don't treat your groin like junk. Respect it with Gillette Intimate, the best a man can get. Buy now at a retailer near you.
It's never personal, only politics. The Devil's Advocates Radio Show with Dom and Crute. Weekdays from 4 until 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
Wisconsin's home for daily conversations about the state's latest headlines and stories.
Weekday mornings from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. From the Mississippi to the Apple and points eastward, you're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK,
Amory's radio station.
Very committed to the highest standards of ethical conduct. Seriously? Including the notorious money sleaze, Clarence Thomas? But wait, even a progressive justice, Elena Kagan, joins in the charade that an ethical code might produce, well, ethics, or at least political cover for the lack thereof. A code, she surmises, would, quote, go far in persuading other people that we are adhering to the highest standards of conduct. Hello, would you be persuaded? Yet, These Supremes won't even take this minimal step of adopting a simple code to measure basic integrity. It would be a good idea for us to do it, Barrett meekly says. It would be a good thing for the court to do that, Kagan echoes. This is Jim Hightower saying, stop it. Stop the pitiful posturing. There's only 9 of you. You're in charge. Convene a happy hour, confront reality, and do the right thing. Just do it. I'll buy the beer.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So you got a couple of Republican Congress people not seeking re-election. You got Ken Buck, the Republican from Colorado, and Kay Granger from Texas not seeking re-election. And we talked yesterday, Earl Blumenauer from out in Oregon, I think, not seeking re-election on the Democratic side. And the question is, how many Republicans are going to go, no, too crazy, time to go do something else? I'm interested to see, especially today with the Santos thing. And here to show you some thoughts on, well, what the next year has in store and the top stories of the day, our good friend Bob Ney, former Ohio congressman and political analyst, here to share some of those thoughts. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you, Rick.
So what do you make of Ken Buck and Kay Granger saying, Matt, we're packing it in?
I think you're going to see members leaving. And there was another member that announced, I think it was the day after McCarthy left or something, or when Jordan didn't make it, they had announced. So I think you're going to see it. I didn't serve with Buck, but I served with Kate and then Earl, who, by the way, met with me many, many times concerning bicycles.
Yep.
So, with the staff, and he did some really neat things. That we changed the system up there for giving people some passes and things for the bike. So, but anyway, I think some of them have been there a while, like Earl and Kate. But also, I think some people are just going to get tired of it.
Yeah.
I mean, I would. You know, people have talked to me about running and things in the past, and somebody said, well, I think maybe you can win. And I said, well, you know what? Maybe I can. Maybe, and that's why I won't run. I might.
And that's the thing, Bob. This is the frightening part of this.
You know.
This is why I bring this up. The frightening part of this is people who want to do the job, people who want to actually get something accomplished, aren't going to run because it's so badly broken.
Yeah. Well, and it's true. Look, yeah, and people right now might be listening saying, who do you think you are? You can run or anything. But, you know, I have had a lot of people over the last, I don't know, 5 or 6 years in particular say, why don't you run, you know, this and that. And I tell them in all seriousness, you've got to want to serve, and the place is unrecognizable. I don't think you can accomplish practically anything. Yeah. I really don't. And I think that people that are considering running, but I knew some people that were going to run, absolutely, and they stopped. And it's not for fear of the election. It's because of what's going on in the system. It's in a complete meltdown. You know, Rick, I used to think that I was maybe old because I would say, well, you know, when I was there, but it's not that I'm old. It's the fact that it has changed, and it's disintegrating by the week out there.
Because I was going to ask you, you know, you were, while you were in Congress, you were one of the Gingrich, one of the Contract on America folks.
And, yeah.
And I know you're very proud of that, and I'm not going to belittle that, not to your face anyway. but, you know, you were a Republican congressman, and at the time you were on the, you know, the pushing the fringe of the time, I would argue. I'm sure you would argue against that. But you and that class unrecognizable in today's Republican Party. So if you were to run, where would you find yourself? Do you have a home in the Republican Party?
I can tell you right now. You know, I never ran the Contract with America ads, and I didn't go out for the signing. I ran my own show. They called me, and I said, I'm not doing it. I'll vote on certain aspects of it, but I'm not going to go out and do that. Because, you know, we always ran our own show. Look, the district had 16% Republican. 16, all right? At the time, Republican Party, you know, I could have two people go to a phone booth. We could have a meeting. I mean, there was, you know, practically no one around. But, you know, I was elected, and I went out there. And if I was to run today, no question in my mind, I would have to run as an independent because I would be primaried. You know, first of all, you know, I don't think January 6th was a tourist day, and I would be primaried. I would have to run independent. There's no, and think about this, Rick. We used to sign, there were 50 of us, and you know some of the names, La Tourette, Lo Biondo of New Jersey, I could name them, that we used to sign letters saying, no, we're not going to undo prevailing wage. No, we're not going to support this bill if you're messing with collective bargaining. We used to sign those. Think about that today. where do you think it would end up at?
Yeah.
Yeah. I wouldn't be politically alive.
No, and for me, that's the problem of where we are, and I agree with your assessment. There's just, you know, because I've had people ask me to run, and, you know, hey, how come you don't run for something? I go, because I don't think I can get anything. I can't get the things done that I want to get done. I think I have more, more ability to change hearts and minds doing this or, you know, with what we're going to be doing in the future than running for an office of where it's just going to be raising money and throwing bombs.
Look, we had Gingrich. We had Nancy Pelosi. At one time, Gephardt, you know, was the minority leader. We had Nancy Pelosi. You had Bill Clinton, you know, as president. And you had a lot of members that were very strong, very opinionated. You know, they were, some of them were agitators. But never at any point in time when I was there did we have people on a weekly basis saying, that member just said this, we're going to censor him. We're going to take a vote and censure them for saying their opinion. We didn't do that. That alone right now, Rick,
yeah.
If you look at everybody they're trying to censure all the time, that alone in itself is so disruptive to the system, plus the entertainment and Marjorie Taylor Three Names and, you know, everything that's going down out there. It's become an entertainment circus, and it's sad. I don't think you could get public policy, Help America Vote Act, it couldn't even survive one hearing, let alone passage.
That's scary stuff. I got to get your thoughts on today's vote on expelling George Santos. I was a little surprised at the numbers. It obviously didn't get the two-thirds vote that it needed. 179, I guess he got 179 votes, 213 voted against the resolution to censure him. 24 Republicans voted with their party, voted to expel Santos. 31 Democrats voted against expelling him. Four Republicans and 15 Democrats voted present. So he's obviously not going to be thrown out. Was this the right choice?
Well, I think so, because it's like Santos, Menendez, you know, is indicted, and people were saying to Menendez, you know, you need to quit. It's like when they had the I'm having a senior moment. The senator from Minnesota, he was the comedian
Al
at one
Franken.
Time. Al Franken. Al Franken wanted to be taken to the ethics committee, and boom, a domino effect happened, and you know he was forced out. Now as ridiculous as Santos is, and, you know, as guilty as Santos is, and I can say that, he's guilty. I mean, guilty is sin. But we still have a system out there
right.
that you go through the judiciary. And as ugly as Santos has been, but I'll apply this to Menendez, too, because he's got an ugly case. And it's uncomfortable, and, you know, you don't like to see it. But there's a system. And so I think it's the right choice. And I bring up Franken because, you know, I'm not sure Franken should resign, have resigned whatsoever.
I didn't think he should have either. But the calls on the left were just way too harsh.
They were way out there.
And the right doesn't do that. That's why I got to tell you, I'm a little surprised that they held this vote. Now, I'm sure they knew it. What he wasn't going to go down. I know there's some ethics information coming out on November 15th. But I was a little surprised that this vote happened.
Right. It was the New York. Look, the New York Republic has pushed for this to happen. They're the ones that are uncomfortable the most and have got the heat, you know. So that's where it started. They wanted him out. I happen to know for a fact, feverishly worked with a lot of the Republican members to try to, you know, get him out. And so some people, you know, voted not present. And, of course, we call that the duck pond. Some people just felt, bad as he is, let it go through the system.
I want to get some of your thoughts on the new speaker. There's a lot of things popping up about Mike Johnson, his past. Evidently, he was the dean of a law school that never opened. And look, it was supposedly a law school that was going to open that would be unashamedly embrace biblical worldviews. So I'm like, you know, how bad did you have to be that the religious money said, no, you're too dysfunctional for your law school to open. And also, I guess he partnered with a gay conversion therapy group. So we're now finding out all these little tidbits about Mike Johnson. So I'm curious, is this an unwarranted hit job? And we're just looking for stuff, or could there be a problem here?
I think there's some things out here. You know, first of all, he's the least experienced speaker in the U.S. House in over 140 years, right? The answer he gave on national TV, I would like to have been the reporter, though. You and I talked about this, about, you know, what do you stand on the positions? Just, you know, read the Bible. I would love to have said, well, would Jesus support the 1% and let people starve? You know, that's the question you'd ask. But, you know, to answer a question that way in itself is really amazing, you know. But, yes, pieces are coming out now. Do I think it's going to be I don't think it's going to be as toxic as it was, let's say, for Gingrich or particularly – toxic as it was for Jim Jordan, only because, you know, people are kind of numb now to the whole scandal side of things. It's just, they're numb. So I think this will come and go. Now, future actions that he'll have are going to be controversial because he's going to satisfy the caucus. But then again, the caucus itself are kind of hypocritical. They threw McCarthy out because he wanted to not have a government shutdown. And here comes Johnson on the heels of that saying, well, let's go till April.
Yeah. Let's not have a government shutdown right away.
And everybody's like, oh, okay. Oh, yeah. Okay. April. Sure. All right. You know.
So now, I do find it interesting
it's a different,
that the new speaker's eager to get back to impeaching Biden because he says he's ready. And he says the impeachment inquiry faded. And they're ready to get back into this, and I'm sure you saw today that they're claiming direct evidence that Biden laundered money, according to James Comer. He said bank records obtained by the House Committee on Oversight and Accountability have revealed a $200,000 direct payment from James and Sarah Biden to Joe Biden in the form of a personal check. His brother wrote him a check. Direct evidence of money laundering.
Well, we'll see what's out there or not. We hear a lot of things. The proof, I guess, as they say, is in the pudding. I frankly doubt that they would impeach Biden anyway. I really do. You know, McCarthy did this to try to save himself. This speaker is not going to agitate, quote, the crowd out there. He's going to continue to pursue some things. I don't think this one, though, would actually launch into it in the middle of 2024. I really don't think so.
Yeah, I had someone email me and said, you know, right in the memo part, it said, you know, 10% for the big guy. And I go, no, that's only the one. That's only the check coming out of Byron Donald's office. Because if you remember, they had doctored some of the things in the one hearing.
Right. And they had said they had certain items and they didn't have them. And like I said, the proof's in the pudding.
Yeah.
If something did happen and they have it, then it will come out. If it's spoken about verbally and not confirmed and they can't link something directly, then it's not going to exist. You know, we have heard about things in the past that's never materialized. It's like the people that were trying to say that the elections were stolen. They would do a press conference and they would name Rudy. Rudy was great at this. He would name four things. Here's what they did. They did this. They had workers going in the building. And, you know, we're going to go after this. And then when you look at the lawsuit, it's not even in there.
Not a peep.
Not even in there. So same thing here. If it, you know, they can say what they want or what they think because the press will print that. But then the proof is going to be, you know, do they have the evidence?
Yeah. Finally, lastly, Chuck Schumer evidently has told Democrats that he is going to file a cloture vote on three key military nominees, finally going to try and go around Tuberville. Now, understand, you know, the guy heading up the carrier group in the Gulf right now is a guy that Tuberville is objecting to. About time, don't you think?
Well, let me just say this. Democrats used to say this. I'll give you a little inside nugget. Democrats used to say it with Republicans when we were on the floor of the House, not at the microphones. And we used to say, you know, we called it the peacock farm. And then one Republican said it, you know, pretty good. He said, you know, Bill Clinton is the opponent. The Senate is the enemy. And so there's always been that House attitude to the Senate. But this amazes me about Chuck Schumer. And I've seen Mitch McConnell do this. You know, the bravery. It's like a JFK profile in courage. We're gonna do the nuclear option. I love the verbiage they use, you know, the nuclear option. All they're going to do is do what they should have done. How they let him, Tommy Tuberville, honestly, how they let him go on, they meaning the Republicans and the Democrats, yep. Schumer included, it's a sin. He has been torturing the entire system, almost destroying over 200 and some appointments, our very military, you know, base, and he's been doing it. And who was so afraid of offending him? You know, this isn't a nuclear option. This is common sense. Should have been done a long time ago.
I'm right there with you. It's called doing your job. Maybe we should try it sometime.
That's it.
There we go. Bob, I appreciate the time. As always, great stuff, my friend.
Thank you, Rick.
Our good friend Bob Ney. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick, at therickssmithshow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back to wrap things up. Stick around. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1835. That was the day that workers in Philadelphia organized what was the first general strike in North America. Their call was for the 10-hour day. The Philadelphia strikers were influenced by earlier actions in Boston. Carpenters in Boston had gone on strike for the 10-hour day as early as 1825. The workers in Boston declared, "We have been too long subjected to the odious, cruel, unjust, and tyrannical system which compels the operative mechanic to exhaust his physical and mental powers. We have rights and duties to perform as American citizens and members of society, which forbid us to dispose of more than 10 hours for a day's work." It was Irish workers on the Schuylkill River coal wharfs who started the Philadelphia strike. Printers, carpenters, and city employees soon joined the cause. In all, 20,000 workers walked off the job and idled the city. The Germantown Telegraph fretted for the well-being of the workers, printing, "The brevity of only a 60-hour work week would be harmful to workers, that all the extra time would be applied to useless and unworthy purposes." After only 1 week, the city caved into the demands of the striking workers. Workers would henceforth work from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. with 1 hour off for lunch and one for dinner. The success of the general strike electrified the labor movement, and a wave of strikes swept the East Coast. By the following year, the 10-hour day was the standard for skilled workers. In 1840, President Martin Van Buren instituted the 10-hour day for federal employees. In our present day, with the increasing attempts to weaken the power of workers and their unions, we must remember our history and our past successes. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com. Back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Remember, subscribe to the podcast. Never miss a moment. Looking forward to our big move, and don't want to lose anybody along the journey. Also, make sure you check your local cable providers, your streaming devices, and find Free Speech TV, where we are going to be calling home in the new year, and looking forward to that. Got an email from Roberto, who says Toyota does not have a pension plan. And look, you know, this is a big part of that compensation that we don't talk enough about. And you know, you look at the fact that a number of the UAW members, their pension plan took a major hit. And a lot of the temp workers didn't have anything. And, you know, this is hopefully going to move in a direction to get them back on board as well. But that era that I grew up believing in and was fortunate enough to work under, that you made a good wage, you had good health insurance, you had a good defined benefit pension that gave you the opportunity to make sure that you were going to have something in retirement, that was the norm of what a job should bring. And now we've moved into this era where, you know, you're just a cog in the wheel. You're a gig employee. You're on your own boss. And you're still working for poverty wages. You're still struggling to make ends meet. You're still working two and three jobs, but there's nothing at the end of the road. And again, this is something that we don't talk enough about. You know, I know when... the company that I work for, the guy who does the hiring, was complaining that they were having a hard time, you know, hiring new people. And I said, look, you know, when I started in this industry, wages were considerably higher. This was a gold standard kind of working class job. And today's dollars probably made at least 12 to 15 bucks an hour more back when I started as compared to today, when adjusted for inflation. Still with the great health care, still with the defined benefit pension. But those jobs were available back in the late 80s. There was still a sufficient union density where those jobs were still around. What's happened as corporate America has been allowed to crush organized labor is those jobs have gone away. And not only have they gone away from you know, having the good union wages and benefits, they've gone away from actually working for the company. They've figured out new gimmicks on how to have third-party logistics companies and temp agencies that you work for that they don't even have responsibility to you as an employee. That's someone else's problem, and they can cut that contract anytime they want, which means all those workers have no rights, have no ability to organize, because you know, what's the point? If the company cuts you off, that's it. And of course they're going to do that. And this is where I've been saying for the longest time, we need to update our labor laws. We need major comprehensive labor law reform, absolutely. But to get to that point, to get there, you have to have the organizing on the ground. Understand, the National Labor Relations Act only came about because workers were in the streets literally tearing this country apart. My grandparents' generation and their parents' generation were literally brick by brick tearing things apart, sitting down, taking over facilities. The capitalists were very nervous that their heads were going to end up on platters, and that was a peace treaty. Well, the wealth class has been emboldened to say, hey, let's destroy all that. And now you're seeing workers going back to the streets. And this is why we should be talking about what it is we want as a working class. I think a 32-hour work week is involved in a in the same conversation as ensuring that we get defined benefit pensions back, that we get the kind of security that our grandparents' generation fought for, that there is a future for working people, especially in the world of AI. As I've said, I'm not a Luddite. I don't say we smash the machines, but we got to benefit from it too. And I'm not saying all of it, but some of it.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK 1260 AM Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app. AB